1999. It involved a Bell helicopter that was owned and operated by Houston Helicopters, Inc., Appalese in this case. Persons on board the helicopter were two Houston Helicopters employees who died in the accident. The helicopter was totally destroyed. The cause of the accident and the reason for the helicopter's crash was determined to be a failure of a group of components called the main rotor hub assembly. Specifically, the red pitch horn separated from what's known as the red main rotor grip. We have a picture of this component in our briefing, but it transmits the pilot's control inputs to the blades and rotates them in flight. When the red pitch horn separated from the red main rotor grip, it rendered the helicopter uncontrollable, resulting in its impact with terrain. Now, it's important that we understand where this red...
The crash, right?
The crash,
the
yes.
Impact with the terrain?
Correct, correct. That's a technical term for crash, I suppose.
Gotcha.
It's important that we understand where this main rotor hub assembly came from. It was constructed entirely by Houston Helicopters from parts that it had on hand in its storeroom, used and serviceable parts that it pulled together and built this main rotor hub assembly, including this pitch horn, which is the primary component that we're interested in this case. They obtained that pitch horn. It originally was sold as a completed helicopter, a component of a completed helicopter by Bell, to the Singapore Air Force in 1976. Singapore Air Force operated that helicopter with the pitch horn on it, switched it between helicopters for a number of
years.
How
much of the rotor assembly was manufactured by Bell?
The rotor assembly itself was not manufactured by Bell. There were components in it that were manufactured
right.
by Bell,
so
and this pitch horn was one of them.
How much of it was manufactured?
We don't really know for sure what the percentage of it was.
Okay, you're talking about the rotor grip?
The main rotor hub assembly itself, well, the grip was manufactured by Bell. The pitch horn was manufactured by Bell. This pitch horn is the suspect part that was purchased by HHI through this different chain of used parts sellers.
But manufactured by Bell.
It was manufactured by Bell, correct.
Okay.
Correct. It has a life limitation on it. It can only be operated for approximately 3,000 hours. So it's important to know how it was used and how long it was used when it's put on a helicopter. Now, when HHI built this main rotor hub assembly, since it wasn't a Bell manufactured assembly, they assigned it its own HHI serial number, FB71829. Same for Felton Baker, the president of HHI. That's not a Bell serial number. That's an HHI serial number. That was required for them to do that since they built it. Now, after the helicopter crashed, there were a number of lawsuits that were filed. Two of them were by the families of the HHI employees who died in the accident, the Smith and the Landrum cases. Those were filed in Jasper and Brazoria County. Bell was the only defendant in those suits. HHI was not a defendant because it was the employer and the workers' compensation bar acted in there to make Bell the sole defendant. Bell settled those cases for $3.01 million. One of those settlements occurred after Bell had already filed this indemnity action in Tarrant County, which is what brings us here today. The plaintiffs in those wrongful death cases allege that the helicopter crash made the basis of this lawsuit occurred because of the failure of the main rotor pitch horn to main rotor grip joint and its components, assemblies, parts while in flight. They also asserted the main rotor hub assembly was flawed. Now, HHI did not pay any of this settlement, did not pay any of the defense costs for any of these cases. At the time of the accident, it's also important to know that HHI was what's known as a Bell customer service facility. That means that they had a contract with Bell that if they used parts not supplied by Bell, that they would defend and indemnify Bell.
Excuse me, you can't bring food in the courtroom.
May I continue?
I'm sorry.
Okay, no problem. That they would defend and indemnify Bell if they chose to use parts not supplied by Bell. What this indemnity provision says is that since HHI is a CSF, that's what a customer service facility is called, that they get special treatment. They get a parts discount. They get access to special information from Bell. And so if they choose to not buy their parts from Bell and they're going to take it from other sources, they're going to vouch for them. They're going to guarantee that Bell's not going to have to suffer any losses from their choice to use those parts. And that's what they did here. That pitch horn that we talked about, that red pitch horn, they purchased from MSI Helicopters, which was a used parts salvage dealer out of New Mexico. It was not Bell. It was not authorized by Bell to sell this part under its written direct ship authority. The agreement actually, in the CSF specs that are part of the CSF agreement, define what a Bell-supplied part is. It's either shipped. It's either supplied directly from Bell or under Bell's written direct ship authority, where they authorize a supplier to send it directly to HHI.
But this was manufactured by Bell.
The pitchhorn was manufactured by Bell. It was not supplied by Bell to HHI. Now, the this agreement is attached to our briefing, and the customer service facility agreement and the specs. Now, the second batch of lawsuits that arose out of this.
What about HHI's contention that, in fact, the part was sent back to Bell with deformed rivets, I guess?
Right. You're talking about the Roseanne inserts and the grip.
Yes.
That contention relates to a different component. That's the grip. It's the big barrel that the blade sticks into, and it holds, it grips the blade. And that pitchhorn attaches to it and rotates it. Now, they separated. Those two parts are connected, and the Roseannes connect them together with some bolts. Those two parts separated in flight. Now, that specific issue about the overhaul of the grip, that was submitted to the court in Brazoria County as a part of the HHI versus Bell litigation that was filed after this indemnity case was filed in Tarrant County. Those issues regarding the grip and the overhaul of the grip and whether or not it was defective were submitted to a jury, and they came back unanimously in Bell's favor on every point. 13 points were submitted. Bell was found not to be negligent. HHI was found to be 100% negligent in causing the accident. And those grip issues that HHI talks about a lot in its briefing were all submitted there and were all determined.
Okay, I understand that, but my question is, relating to the indemnity agreement, I'm not necessarily seeing how the jury's failure to find negligence by Bell automatically brings that piece of the helicopter within the indemnity agreement.
Okay. This is part of the confusion with the briefing and what they choose to focus on and what we're focusing on. The part that we are interested in, the part that we know was that they installed that was not supplied by Bell under the terms of the agreement, which means it was sent directly from Bell, is the pitchhorn. That pitchhorn was what they got through all these various hands from the Singapore Air Force. The grip was sent to Bell at some point multiple times and overhauled by Bell and sent back. But that's just one part of this whole assembly that is at issue. And it is one part of the components that separated. The pitchhorn, in fact, was connected with these bolts and separated in flight.
But the indemnity agreement, I mean, how are we supposed to address the indemnity agreement if one of the parts was supplied by Bell and one of the parts was not supplied by Bell?
Well, the indemnity agreement specifically says that if they use or sell critical or flight safety parts, which they've admitted that this was, this pitchhorn qualified as a critical or flight safety part, not supplied by Bell, then they've got to assume the defense. Since they use that part, then they've got to vouch for it. And their choice in using that part is what triggers this indemnity provision. It's all about what HHI chooses to do. And there has been no finding that this grip was defective, as they assert. The jury came back adverse to all those claims and found in Bell's favor on every one of them. So that's never been established, that grip was actually defective.
So the overhaul that Bell did not include the pitchhorn?
Correct. It only had to do with the grip, which is part of the components of the main rotor hub assembly, but it's not the pitchhorn. It's the pitchhorn is bolted onto the grip by HHI when they built it.
All right. And so that part of the assembly never went to Bell for repair?
That's correct.
Or overhaul?
That's correct.
After Bell manufactured it, it never went back to Bell for any
reason? We've seen no evidence that part ever in the some odd 20 years, 20 years that it was out in the field, that it ever came back to Bell for overhaul. The records for the use of that pitchhorn were very patchy. There were a lot of gaps in it. And we know that Singapore Air Force switched it between helicopters many times. There's blank sections in the records for that pitchhorn. And we believe that, and we've shown through our expert testimony at trial, that pitchhorn was not even airworthy to be used on a helicopter, let alone that it obviously doesn't fall within the terms of the CSF agreement, where they chose to buy it from MSI rather than buying it from Bell.
All right. In a fixed-wing airplane, you have to do the 100-hour.
Right.
Okay. What's the equivalent for a...
They have 100-hour inspections also in helicopters, and HHI was a Part 135 air taxi operator, and when this crash happened, actually, they were returning from a forest fire fighting contract, it's hard for me to say all at the same time, with the U.S. government at that time under their Part 135 operations. Now, they did the maintenance under Part 145 as a certified repair station, and so they did that work, HHI, for the 135 certificated air taxi operation.
Okay.
Well, essentially, we brought up several points of error. One of them I've touched on quite a bit already, the finding of fact number 8, which is that the trial court found that Bell manufactured this main rotor hub assembly. I believe truly that the court was somewhat confused by, as most people are, by all these terms that fly about the different components. And it is undisputed that HHI built the main rotor hub assembly. After all, they assigned their own serial number to it, FB71829. So it wasn't a Bell serial number. They created it. We cite at length the deposition testimony and trial testimony about this in our brief, and I won't belabor that here, but we think that finding was against the great weight and preponderance of the evidence and should be reversed. The next one is the conclusion of law number 1, which is these fair notice requirements and whether or not they are applicable. The trial court found that Bell's indemnity agreement was unenforceable because it did not meet the conspicuousness and express negligence components of the fair notice requirements.
Okay, I've got a question. I'm sorry. The wrongful death lawsuits, didn't they involve Bell's actions in overhauling the rotor assembly?
There were,
As I understand it, they were not aimed at the pitch horn.
What they said was that the main rotor hub assembly, the helicopter crash made the basis of this lawsuit, occurred because of the failure of the main rotor pitch horn to main rotor grip joint and its components, assemblies, and parts while in flight. So they talked about the pitch horn in there. Now, obviously, HHI was not a defendant in that action. They had the workers' compensation bar there. And so when the plaintiffs plead these causes of action, they're primarily going to talk about Bell. But they talked about in here that the main rotor hub assembly was flawed. They talked about the separation of the pitch horn from the grip. HHI built all that stuff. HHI knew that. It was involved in the accident directly. It was involved in the maintenance and buildup of this helicopter, main rotor hub assembly. And so these fair notice requirements, I'm about to run out of time here, but they do not apply to all indemnity agreements like HHI claims. They are reserved for this special class where a party seeks indemnity from its own negligence. All the cases say the same thing, when a party seeks indemnity for its own negligence. And you can see from the terms of this indemnity contract that it's focused. It's not about Bell. It's not about Bell's actions. It's about HHI's choice in using parts not supplied by Bell. And you can see on the face of this indemnity provision that it's not intended to incorporate an indemnity for Bell's negligence. It doesn't go that far, not like the indemnity provisions that are quoted at length in all the cases from the Texas Supreme Court, Fifth Circuit
Mr.
Court,
David,
and otherwise. Yes, sir.
I don't see in the findings of fact that there is a finding that the pitch horn was the cause, nor that it was alleged that the pitch horn separately was the cause of the failure of the main rotor pitch horn motor, main rotor grip, and its components. How do we focus in on your argument that we're only talking about the pitch horn when we're talking about indemnity whenever we don't have a finding that the accident was the result or approximately caused by the issue of just the pitch horn?
I don't think that we can say that it is, I don't think it's necessary to say that it's only because of the pitch horn. And if there's not a finding from that it's only because of the pitch horn, that's the only thing that can trigger this. It was undisputed that they used it. And that triggers the indemnity.
Thank
Thank you.
May it please the Court, Counsel, Your Honors, this is not rocket science. The case was tried to Judge Sutter. She's very perceptive. She heard all of this argument, and she didn't believe a word of any kind of allegation against that pitch owner. She knew that the case was settled by Bell because of what was going on at the time. Within 16 days of the accident, Bell knew exactly what parts were in this helicopter when it crashed. They knew how much time was on the pitch horn. They knew that the grip had gone back to Bell twice. In the pleadings of the Smith and Landrum plaintiffs, they pled grip. They did not focus on the pitch horn. Bell did not focus on the pitch horn in the Smith and Landrum cases, nor did Bell focus on the pitch horn in the HHIS case. Now, Bell wants to say that, hey, we paid the money, so we want it back, in spite of the fact that the Brazoria County jury found Houston Helicopters at fault for the accident, not because of that pitch horn, but because Houston Helicopters didn't catch the fretting. Fretting is caused by parts moving. It had nothing to do with a part except in that charge, and I bet you've read it, talks about when should Houston Helicopters have caught the defective grip. The defective grip. Nothing about a pitch horn. Now, what the jury found was that the pilot should have not flown the aircraft with the fretting, that this fretting had been going on for a while, as found by the NTSB, and that they were negligent. Houston Helicopters, us, were negligent in flying helicopters, maintaining the helicopter, and then the pilot and the mechanic flying the doggone thing with that fretting going on. That's the basis of why they found it. Didn't have anything to do with the pitch horn, focusing at the pitch horn. Nobody focused on the pitch horn except in this particular case. Now, if you read the recitation of facts in my brief, that's the longest recitation of facts I've ever put in an appeals brief because I think it's really important. Now, if we go back to the indemnity clause, we're talking immediately about parts. Okay. What are we talking about here with regard to what parts are involved which caused Bell to settle? When Bell settled, it had the benefit of probably seven or eight of its own experts, among which were several metallurgists. The metallurgists were telling Bell and its lawyers, look, you got a real problem here because this thing has gone back to Bell twice. And when we sent it back to Houston Helicopters the first time, it didn't have Roseanne's even in it. And the second time we sent it back to them, we didn't put oversized Roseanne's in it. And our procedures manuals are conflicting because one place it says if you bore the hole out, which we know the hole was bored out because of the testimony that Judge Sutter recognized, that when the thing was sent up there, the hole was deformed. When it came back, it was not deformed any longer. The Roseanne's that they put in it didn't reach the bottom of the doggone hole. And so we know when those experts of Bell said the Roseanne's walked out, and even they admit in the testimony that a properly installed Roseanne insert does not walk out, they knew that it didn't have anything to do with the pitch horn. It was caused by the Roseanne's coming out. And the bolts going through the Roseanne obviously did their job. The holes on the inside are the same. Were always the same for the size of the bolts. They actually did their job. The Roseanne's failed. Now, let me move on to something else. I think it's really important in this case to recognize that what Bell is trying to do here is trying to circumvent the application of 82002 of the Civil Practices and Remedies Code. That's the real thrust here. And we don't buy, and Judge Sirleaf didn't buy, the fact that they're not trying to escape their own negligence by this clause. Now, so I'm saying that it is extremely important in all indemnity cases to look at the facts first, and in this case they're very important because we've got Bell trying to get past not only 8202 but trying to get past 417 of the labor code that says these people that got killed were employees. All right, so if you move on to the second arm, I call it, of the fair notice rule, that's what's really important in this particular case, because what Bell is trying to do also is get past the labor code, 417, but Bell's claim is based on a 98 contract. And the part that they're pointing at was put on this helicopter in 93. So if Bell wants to come along and say, which it didn't do, that they want indemnity even for Houston Helicopter's employees, but more importantly, they want indemnity for all of these parts all over the world that have been put on helicopters and don't come directly from Bell, then they have a real problem. It's not our burden to establish the contract they're suing on. They sued on a 98 contract and for a part that had been on a helicopter for years. So they could have written the thing possibly where you might think that it's acceptable by first saying, okay, you have to understand we're wanting you to indemnify for your own employees. But next, we want you to indemnify for all of those parts out there that didn't come directly from Bell. That's a fatal flaw in this indemnity agreement. Now, Judge Walker zeroed in on the fact of the case. That grip was the cause of the accident, and it went back to Bell twice, and the crux of it is that thing came directly from Bell. That caused the accident. So they've not got any case. Now, you know that I have contended that this is a frivolous appeal. I believe that, or I wouldn't have brought it up. I've been practicing law 42 years. I don't think that they ever had a case. I don't think they should have ever jumped over in Fort Worth and filed a case against Houston Helicopters. They should have brought it in the Smith and Landrum, either the Smith or the Landrum, or the Houston Helicopters case. They didn't do that. So when you look at it from a res judicata standpoint, I believe that it was required. Now, I don't think there's any reasonable expectation that they can expect you to reverse Judge Sutter's judgment in this case. And I feel like we're entitled to sanctions. Thank you.
Matt, you want to reply?
Yes, sir.
This frivolous appeal argument, that was filed on Friday. We received it by FedEx this morning. This case, I don't think frivolous appeal motions and sanctions are even supposed to be heard by this court. I think they're on submission. Clearly, we have plenty of case law that supports our arguments, and there's no basis. They've shown no basis that this is a frivolous appeal. It certainly doesn't meet the standards articulated by the court, which I looked at today when I got the motion.
Would you respond to his comment that this was a contract that you're trying to apply to something that happened in 93?
Right. He's talking about the 1998 contract.
The 98 agreement.
Right. The 1998 to 1999 Bell CSF agreement was the agreement that was in place at the time of the accident. It was the time that they were using non-Bell supplied parts in the operation of this helicopter. They had continued to do maintenance, like the court mentioned earlier about these inspections, periodic inspections, all during that time period, where they were using these non-Bell supplied parts, specifically the pitch horn, on this main rotor hub assembly. Interestingly enough, HHI complains that Bell is moving under this contract. HHI did too. HHI relied on the 1998-1999 contract for its own declaratory judgment claims in Judge Sutter's court. I find it difficult for them to now attack us for it, too. They relied on it for, this case was pending since 2001, I guess 7 years.
So that's your position, because they relied on it, it was in effect?
No, that's not the only part of it. It was certainly in effect at the time of the accident.
The agreement was in effect, but, I mean, applied retroactively to existing aircraft?
That aircraft, they built the main rotor hub assembly back in 1993. It sat in a shop or something. They installed it later. It was, I'm not sure exactly right now, the date that it was installed. We know that they were using those parts, that pitch horn, during the pendency of this 1998-1999 agreement. It's the agreement. They had been a CSF for, I think, about 10 years before that under various agreements, but that was the one in effect at the time of the accident, which gives rise to the claims against Bell. This issue, did you have anything else about that?
Mr. David?
Yes, sir.
You said that the records on the time of use of the pitch arm were patchy.
That's right.
And then I heard Mr. Powell say that Bell knew the hour.
He did. I'm right, and I'll tell you why. Because when he said Bell knew it, what he was saying is HHI told Bell that. What he's talking about is the NTSB factual report, where it recites that according to the operator, the pitch horn had been in use for, I'm going to get the number wrong, approximately 1,400 hours, 1,600 hours in that range. They reported that. The NTSB was interested in that so much they said, HHI, please go find your records about this pitch horn so we'll know where it came from and how it was used. And they had to go ask MSI for documents. They didn't even know how it was used. And MSI had to go find the records somewhere else, and they couldn't understand them. And they did some math, and they came up with a number that they would report. So that's what he's talking about. The fact is that at trial, they produced the logbooks for the first time in 7 years that the case was ongoing. On the next to last day of trial, they finally produced the logbooks from the Singapore Air Force we've been seeking for so long. They show that there were huge gaps. They had no basis for that time and use. With regard to Bell should have brought this indemnity action against the Smith and the Smith and Landrum cases, that's impossible. HHI was not a party to those cases. Bell couldn't bring that claim against HHI in those cases. And at the time that HHI filed that case down in Brazoria County, Bell had already filed this indemnity action in Tarrant County. HHI could have very well brought its claims against Bell in this action. They chose not to. They ran down 5 days later, filed another action, and now that is somehow being used as res judicata against Bell in this case, which doesn't meet the requirements of Rule 97 for compulsory counterclaims, and it doesn't meet the purposes of res judicata, which is to avoid the imposition of continued litigation and satellite litigation. HHI itself went out and filed one, and now they want to complain about it. We had a case that was first filed, and that's this case, and they should have brought their claims here. This idea that Bell is trying to get indemnity from the world for all of its parts that it sells is just not even close to what we're talking about in this case. What we're talking about is a specific contract between HHI and Bell that talks about what HHI does in its operations as a Bell CSF and what it's going to do to prevent Bell from having to incur losses for HHI's decisions. Thank you.
I have a question.
Yes.
I keep going back to this indemnity clause, but it looks like it says, well, it does say that HHI basically will indemnify Bell or assume the defense of any lawsuit related to the sale, installation, or use of such parts and agrees to indemnify Bell and hold harmless for any loss, damage, or expense, including but not limited to attorney's fees, which Bell incurs as a result of or in connection with the sale, installation, or use of the critical part. So the problem that I'm having that I tried to indicate earlier is it looks like the as a result of is not limited to the part not supplied by Bell, that the crash was as a result of both a part supplied by Bell and a part not supplied by Bell.
I understand what you're saying. And there are multiple parts in the main rotor hub assembly, which is
right.
is where you're going, I think.
Right.
What we know is what the plaintiffs discussed in their pleadings in the Smith and Landrum cases. They discussed the pitch horn separating from the grip in flight. And these losses, which we've established through even the testimony of our experts in this indemnity action, show that this accident occurred in connection with at least HHI's use of that pitch horn. They made the whole assembly. We cannot forget that.
Okay. And those lawsuits were based on the grip. But if the rotor assembly came apart, then if the problem was with Bell's repair of the part Bell repaired, you're saying they still have to indemnify you because it came apart from something that Bell did not sell to them, even though Bell manufactured it. And so the fact that it merely involved it, even though it wasn't a failure on the part of the pitch horn, even if it was totally a failure of the assembly that Bell had provided and repaired, they still have to indemnify you. That's a problem I have.
I don't think that we're going quite that far. What we're talking about is, and we don't have to wonder about what caused the accident. We don't have to wonder whether or not Bell's overhaul of the grip was the cause of the accident. That's been submitted to a jury. All those claims about the overhaul of the grip and the Roseanne's pulling out and the oversized holes and the boring and all that stuff, that was all presented down in Brazoria County to a jury. And they came back in Bell's favor on every one of those. Breach of warranty claim against Bell for not overhauling the grip right? No. Bell was negligent in overhauling the grip? No. Who caused the accident? HHI, 100%. So we don't have to wonder what the real cause of it was. They presented all that stuff in connection with that case.
Well, if the cause was failure then on the part of HHI, to watch the wear on the rotor assembly, I'm still having a problem with that being a failure of the pitch horn.
The plaintiff's claims, again, they certainly talk about the grip in their pleadings, the plaintiffs do, in those Smith and Landrum cases. But they also talk about the pitch horn and its separation from the grip. And we cannot look at those pleadings in a vacuum and say that when HHI knows it built that main rotor hub
assembly. Or the grip separation from the pitch horn.
Right. The pitch horn was never, the pitch horn separated from the grip. Actually, that was the only part that was never found in the whole accident investigation. The suspect pitch horn disappeared. But the fact is that they talk about it, and I don't think we can ignore that. And when we have these issues about the grip presented to a jury, we can't ignore that jury finding either. We can't look at that stuff and say, well, we're going to exclude all that and we're just going to focus on the other parts. We have to look at it as a whole.
Any other questions? Any other questions? All right.
Thank you.
We appreciate your coming.
Thank you very much.
To argue today. I know some of you had a long trip. Your case is submitted, and you are free to go about your business or free to stay in the courtroom and watch the next case. Thank you.